Well, welcoming into the studio now, we have Karen O'Leary. Very nice to meet you, Karen.
Oh, kia ora. It's long very
time
nice to be
fan,
here.
First time meeting you.
Well, likewise.
And Tereda in Auckland. Hey there.
Tired old been here forever guy who's sitting here.
Tired means you've been here with a guy. What?
Yeah. Just sitting here wondering, what is the point of physical exertion if you can't throw a sweaty towel to a child to take care of? What's the point? What's the point?
Maybe fitness or some sort of, well-being within yourself.
Deeply philosophical from you, Radha.
Thanks.
But similarly, I like throwing sweaty towels at children. That's what I do as part of my other job.
Yeah, they need to learn how to carry towels to the laundry. I've spent a whole morning carrying towels to the laundry. It's made me a better person.
How could you be any better than you are? Look, we're going to. I want to get through to the stories for today. And the researchers teaching robots to write a stage play in the Czech Republic did catch my eye, I have to say. Who found the story and who wants to talk
to it? I found this, Lynn, and I thought this would be so far up your alley that you've built a small bungalow and moved in.
Love the Czech Republic, having said that.
You do. Look, we're due to have the 100th anniversary of a book, Rossum's Universal Robots, written in 1921 by, a Czech author, Karol and Joseph Kupic, and it's credited with originating the term robot. And they said, 100 years ago, a man wrote a theatre play about robots. What if today robots wrote a theatre play about men? I don't know.
And maybe
how
women.
They will.
Maybe
and women,
as well.
Possibly
yeah.
women. You know, it's hard to know whether the algorithm is programmed that way, Karen.
Well, that's a very good question, actually. And I was wondering when I was looking at this and thinking about it, really, have the robots actually written the play themselves or have they been programmed to do so? I mean, are we actually giving them more credit than they're due? What do you think, Lynn?
Whoa, no, I'm just supposed to sit here and let you
Oh,
be
you're
funny.
Not supposed to talk
this
say anything.
No,
sorry. You did say, when I came in, you said you were going to be the straight one.
And
I said, but that's fine because I'll be the gay one. But you can still be funny if you want to.
No, I wish I could. That's why I'm just so not funny. But I think that is philosophically really interesting, and I'm deeply sceptical about this. There we go.
They've had robots write music and various other things. If you give them all of the, you plug them into the Ethernet and then thus into the internet, and they have all of the knowledge in the world, depending on how fast they can download it. And then, I guess, through their AI and their machine learning, they can pull everything together and write something meaningful about us.
That is meaningful. But here's a question for you. Who made the robots?
Well,
because they didn't make themselves, did they?
Well, it's like babies, you know. Who makes a baby? But then the baby is a
semi-autonomous
kind of scenario, you know. And it goes off and learns its own kind of things. You know, machine learning
it's becoming a sentient being, the robot. And it's like, what I need to do is write a play.
Yeah. Will its feelings be hurt if the play is no good and it reads online a number of bad comments on the social media about what a terrible play it is?
Yeah, and also I was wondering, who's the audience for this play? Like, do we have an audience of robots, and are they just sitting there like people but robots? You know, do they clap? Is it the same for robots? Do they clap into a standing ovation? What do they do?
They blink their little unblinkable eye, if you know what I mean. The little light on their
Yeah, they probably shine little lights when they're feeling really enthused about something. Yeah, flash, flash, flash.
I'm quite looking forward to it. And to be fair, there have been a number of people, actual humans, who have written plays, many of them dreadful. So could a robot possibly be any worse?
So that is true. Now, there's a lesson here. If you are posing for a photograph with an ancient piece of art, don't break off its toes. I saw a snippet of this on TV the other night, but someone's an Austrian tourist really shows us what not to do.
I think the other lesson there probably is don't be caught on camera if you're going to break a sculptor's toes. I mean, that would be another lesson that I'd learn from that.
And also, if you are then caught on camera, like if you do break a sculpture and you are caught on camera, try to look innocent as if nothing has happened, because this person said, I didn't really know that I'd broken the toes off this particular sculpture.
He definitely knew. It was pretty obvious.
It was the body language.
It was the picking up of the toes with his hand and then quickly shuffling them along. Like, that was made it pretty obvious.
Did I know if he took the toes with him or not? Because then that would have been theft as well, I suppose, theft of a toe. So this was a sort of a sculpture of Napoleon Bonaparte's sister as Venus. So she's sort of lounging there, and he sort of sits on her feet and lounges on her while I presume a friend of his takes a photo. I don't know if you would do that and get a stranger to take a photo, because if you were in a gallery, Karen, and someone said, could you take a photo of me lounging on a sculpture? What would your reaction be?
Well, it would depend on whether the signs are up there saying, please do not lounge on our sculptures. Because if they were up there, then obviously I'd probably be a little bit, you know, worried about getting a stranger to be involved in that.
But if there were no signs, would you just not automatically assume don't lounge on the sculpture?
Well, I would automatically think, I like the sculpture, I want to lounge on it, maybe.
They are. Some of them are loungeable.
Yes.
And you want to drape yourselves over them. But that is that thing of having that kind of access to art, Amy. But, you know, in Russian galleries and things like that, you know, they've got these priceless works of art, and the only security is an elderly woman. And as soon as you get just a little bit too close, she just goes, "Nyet," and you go, "Oh," and you move away. It's terrifying. Yeah.
Well, this is the thing. I think in the current day and age, we're so used to having big signs that saying all the things you cannot do. So if you didn't notice a sign, I feel like you'd be like, this is a free-for-all. I'm going to give this a big lie down.
The views of Karen are not endorsed by
the Museum of New Zealand.
Don't try that out in your nearest art gallery. I think they were unlucky. It was a plaster sculpture rather than marble, perhaps a little bit more delicate. Right, cannibal ants trapped in a Soviet nuclear weapons bunker have escaped. Like something from a movie.
Escaped
is quite paranormal.
I was just thinking that could be your next storyline.
If it
Karen.
Wasn't the robots doing the play, it could definitely be the cannibal ant.
We're just here giving you ideas.
This is the only reason I came, actually, so thank you very much for that.
We just want a credit.
Yeah.
It's like you know, we get to that point where you go, 2020, it just can't get any worse, and then a story like this turns up. And so there were these ants, and they were found in this kind of former nuclear weapons bunker, living in the kind of ammunition room, so where the nuclear stuff had kind of been stored. And they'd got in through a ventilation thing. They'd dropped down, and once they were in, they couldn't get out. But they were only the kind of worker ants, so they couldn't reproduce, and there was no food. And so they were eating each other, but yet they still seemed to be increasing in numbers. So I think they were dropping in from the top. And so some scientists who were studying them went, well, what if we, these ants, these cannibal ants, able to reproduce in a way that no one could understand in a nuclear bunker?
What if we just get
a stick and put it up to where they can escape and come back in a year and see if they're still there. What? Like, what? That's not a good idea. Anyway, they weren't still there. That's the point of the story. They've gone. No one knows where.
Yeah, I find the use of the word escape interesting, especially because they obviously have been given the option to just leave of their own accord. So it's almost like if we went to a New Zealand correctional facility and said, look, you know, 119 inmates have escaped, but actually we just left all the doors open and said, if you want to go, you can go. It would be a bit different, wouldn't it?
Would be. Actually, this is, I kind of often bore people with this. My favourite statistic about New Zealand corrections is, for a period of time, the most common method of escape was simply classified as walking away. So
genius. I love it. Yeah. So relaxed in New Zealand, isn't it?
We are relaxed. So where can they go?
Yeah.
Nice segue with escaping. This time, another escaped animal, an escaped emu. This is weird.
There seems to have been a plague of escaped emus in the kind of desert regions of America. I don't know whether it's because people, you know, have adopted small emus and then the emus have become larger without them realising the emu was going to be of this size, and then they just let them go.
They need to do their research because they're rather big.
Yeah, I think even an emu chick would be rather large, wouldn't it?
Yes, I'd say so.
Yeah, but nonetheless, this one escaped. And then some very brave locals. I don't know, have you had much contact with an emu, Karen?
I'm an emu fan. I've obviously seen them at the zoo, and I've had an altercation, like a dance-off of sorts, up in Tauranga one time with a very enthusiastic emu, which was lovely. But then I realised it was actually getting quite aggressive, and I had to sort of walk away from that dance-off without winning, which is a shame.
Can you describe the method in which you walked away? Did you back away carefully, or did you turn and try to run?
I did not turn and try and run. I sort of backed away. I kind of danced away, so slowly. Whilst not wanting the emu to be sad that I was leaving, I knew that I needed to get out. Its feet were getting very high in the air. It was starting to look a little bit aggressive. So I just kind of I sauntered backwards. I just whisked around and then slowly walked off like I was going to see another animal. Right. And I hoped the emu didn't
have any
feelings.
How long did you maintain eye contact for?
With the emu?
Yeah, while you were walking away, did you maintain eye contact?
Yeah, probably, it's talking about 30 to 40 seconds.
Right.
And then I did a slow turn. Like, it wasn't a quick turn. I just did a slow, I'm still looking at you, I'm still dancing with you, and now I'm not looking at you, I'm going away.
That's useful information.
I mean, looking at this story, I was thinking, really, in Arizona, is that where we were? Arizona?
Yeah.
Is lassoing the best technique for an emu? I mean, are you looking at that bird, you're looking at its body, and you're thinking, what's the best way we can capture this bird? I know, we'll get a big rope and tie it around that big, stretchy bongy neck. I just think they could have come up with a better plan.
Much easier to rescue escaped kittens. Escaping is absolutely the theme for today. Houdini kitten rescued from three vehicles in one day. Oh, you know, you can't really go wrong with a kitten story at the end of a hard week.
No, you can't. Particularly if it's a kitten that, you know,
with a happy ending.
Well, is it a happy ending? Let us dismantle this story in a similar manner to which they had to dismantle three vehicles in the space of a few hours. So a kitten was meowing in a car, and they looked down. They couldn't get the car out, so they had to find the owner, take it away, dismantle it. They dismantled it. Kitten escaped immediately, went and hid in another car in a similar way. That car, BMW, had to be dismantled, and then it immediately escaped and hid in the engine of the RSPCA van that had come to rescue it, and that had to be dismantled. That's a lot of dismantling.
Absolutely. I guess, again, we're looking at the words here, like we talked about escaping when you've just been let, the door's been left open. Are you actually a Houdini if you get out of somewhere and then quickly go back and trap yourself again, time and time again? I mean, I'm just wondering about the use of the word Houdini there.
The nice thing is that the kitten has been named Los. I thought it would have been named Houdini. And I'm sure it will end up in a very nice family.
Imagine what kind of magic career you could have if your tricks involved getting stuck in something and then a whole lot of people coming in and getting you unstuck, and you stood up and would go, yes, ta-da.
And we'll go, stuck again.
That's not a trick. That's just, you're getting stuck in places. People are dismantling things.
They are. Look, we've only got a minute to go, so Karen, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to break with tradition. How's Wellington Paranormal going? Have you been filming?
Yes, we've just finished, actually. We finished last Friday, so season 3's in the can, so to speak, and it'll be out on the TV at some stage in the future once they've done all the fantastic stuff that makes me look good.
My very quick question to you. Is anything you filmed in Wellington Paranormal this year weirder than actually 2020 current affairs?
It couldn't possibly be, I don't think. You know, to be honest, we've got some pretty strange things in there, but 2020 takes the cake for sure.
And we know that season 4 will have cannibal ants as well.
And kittens that can trap themselves.
Absolutely, and lassoed emus.
Yeah.
All good fodder. Thank you so much talking to Karen O'Leary and to Radar.